Good evening, everybody. My name's Travis. If you don't know me, I'm one of the pastors here. Welcome to Summit View, as Sebastian said, as he led us in worship. I just enjoy worshiping the Lord. Sometimes it's hard to imagine. It's difficult to imagine. And sometimes I really do resonate with that song. When I look at my own life of faith and I look at what I believe to be true, what I think that God has said and how He's communicated in His Word, and then I live my life moment by moment by moment and all the different steps that I take, and sometimes it feels like God's kind of just distant, and you know, there's the promise of heaven, but it's years down the road potentially, and it's never enough to imagine in my mind's eye. And sometimes, I don't know, have you ever been in a situation like where you're in church? I grew up in church, and I heard a lot of these sort of motivational talks where, you know, someone would say, hey, you need to give your whole life to Jesus right now. Give up everything that you have. Give all of it to Him. You know, if He's not Lord of all of your life, He's not Lord at all in your life, and you need to just go, go, go. And sometimes I remember sitting back, you know, in the pew. We were sitting in pews because, you know, church people got to sit in pews for some reason. I remember thinking, like, can I go to college first? Like, what about my dream of being in a band and, like, rocking out and traveling the world? And, you know, what about all these different things that I have, God? Do I have to give it all up for the sake? And can I wait a little bit? And, you know, sometimes it just seemed really, really abrupt. Like, I was being asked maybe to take these giant leaps of faith when really inside me I needed to take little baby steps of faith in following Jesus. It seemed like too much to ask. And sometimes, you know, there's different passages in the Bible that describe a narrative, describe an event. And we're going to look at a couple of those today. We're in the second week of our Follow series. This is a series we call Follow. And what we're doing is we're kind of walking away a little bit from some of the more, you know, bullet point-esque parts of the Bible where you got the rules for living and things like that and the systems of thought. And we're going in a deep dive into the narratives, into the life of Jesus and the various actions that Jesus took as He gathered followers and set them down a path. And so we're talking about that. Last week, I introduced the series, and I introduced a guy named Matthew that Jesus walked up to, and Matthew was a tax collector, and Matthew was kind of, you know, a despicable sort of guy at the time. And Jesus didn't walk up to him and ask him to change all this stuff. He was a sinner. But Jesus instead said, hey, follow me. And so I set up last week that most of us, as we think about religion or we just think about whether we're good or bad, we tend to divide the world into two categories, the good people and the bad people. And what we don't mean is that we don't actually look at the good column and say those people don't ever sin, because those are the people who sin just a little bit. The bad column, that's like the murder, that's like the really, really bad stuff, oppressing people and genocide and things like that. And on the good side, you know, we're human, so we just sort of screw up. So there's like the little white lies and stuff. But we can still call it little sins and big sins. And what we talked about last week is there's really, really not a difference. We're all in the bad column. But it's like Jesus didn't even care about that as He walked up to Matthew, the sinner. And instead, He kind of made it easy for Matthew to follow Him. He said, follow me. Instead of just telling Matthew, like, okay, now give up everything and move on, He just said, let's just take one little step. And I'm going to come to your house. And by the way, you can invite all your tax collector friends and your sinner friends. And Jesus was there, and He hung out with sinners. And He just had one simple instruction, follow. And so we pointed out four things last week. The first thing, well, let me just talk about this for a second, because the whole point of following Jesus, it's like a vine and a branch, right? The branch can't grow unless it's connected in with the vine. The whole point of following Jesus is about relationship. You can actually be close to God and be in relationship with Him. And when you're close to God, things start happening to you, just like that branch can start bearing fruit. Can't do that apart from the vine. So Jesus said, hey, I'm like a vine. You're like the branch. Okay? We talked about these things. We talked about the Pharisees, these religious people that thought they were good. And they said, you know what? You can follow us, but you have to change first, and then you can join us. Jesus flipped that around. He said, no, just join us. Come into relationship. And like that branch, you'll be changed. Just being close to me will change you. And so we talked about this. If you want to follow Jesus, the first prerequisite is you have to be a sinner. You have to admit and come clean about your sin, really is what it is, because we're all sinners. And the problem with the Pharisees is they wouldn't admit it. They thought they were righteous. They thought they could work their way to being good. Matthew, he knew the category that he was in, and yet he followed. Being a sinner is a requisite. I talked a little bit about this. To follow Jesus, your faith can be very tiny. I don't even think Matthew fully knew who Jesus was when he started following him. He wasn't what we would call a believer, necessarily. And it took him some time. And it's okay, your faith can be very small, and it's going to take you some time. We talked about this, that the invitation to follow Jesus is not an invitation into a path of asceticism or obedience in a certain way or behaving certain ways. It's an invitation primarily into relationship, and it's through that relationship that your life transforms. And then we talked about this because we're all sinners, because it kind of evens out the playing field, and because it's Jesus that changes us. And because Jesus set the example by going to the ultimate sinner of the day and having a relationship with him and associating himself with him, it means that when we try to divide the world into the two categories of good and bad, there's no room to do that anymore for us. And so it makes us a lot less critical of other people in our lives. So we talked about that. And then I asked two things for us to consider in the last week. First of all, am I willing to admit that I'm sick? You know, Jesus said, yeah, I came for the sick, not the healthy, or at least those who think they're healthy. I came for the sinners. Am I willing to fess up and admit, no, I don't have it all together and I actually need some help? And then ask this other question is just simply, am I following? Not how far along down the path am I, but am I following? And so today we're going to expand on this. And I just want to talk about taking a step. What does it look like to take a step towards following Jesus like Matthew did? And so we're going to jump into another narrative. I want to pray first, and then we'll open up the Bible. Just let's pray. God, we need your help. We thank you that Jesus went to the cross for us to take care of that sin so we can admit that we're sinners and doesn't cause an obstacle between you and us. The whole point of that is we get to be near you. And so we believe that you are here. We believe that you are near to us right now. And we ask that because of that, that like the vine and the branch, that you would, for each one of us as branches, pump a little life into us. Let us grow just a little bit today. Help us to see clearly where we're actually at. And I pray that you'd start nudging us, because we believe that you can do that, because you're really here. In those areas where we're not following. Help me speak. Open up your word to us. Enlighten us tonight. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so there's multiple kind of descriptions of Jesus in the Bible. There's Matthew, the book of Matthew. A guy named Matthew, the tax collector, actually the sinner we talked about last week, he wrote that book. It's an eyewitness, firsthand account of the life of Jesus as it played out historically. The second book in there is Luke, the book of Luke. And Luke is a little bit more like you and me. Like Matthew, he's a Jew. He's writing to a Jewish audience who believe in God. They've already got a lot of faith. He's just trying to kind of convince them Jesus is the Messiah that they've been looking for. Luke, he's writing to a Gentile audience. This is an audience that's a little disconnected from it all. They don't necessarily have a belief or faith in God. And Luke starts off his book by saying, hey, I've thoroughly researched this. Here's all the information so that you can logically understand. And then Mark is another book that has a lot of the life of Jesus. And Mark was actually a follower of a guy named Peter who was a firsthand follower of Jesus. And Mark got most of his stuff from Peter and kind of wrote down what Peter's account was in the life of Jesus. And then John is another disciple of Jesus. He's a firsthand eyewitness to the events. And there's different descriptions of these events. And actually, the person we're going to talk about today, he's mentioned, and kind of where he meets Jesus is mentioned in each one of these Gospels. And so I want to start with Matthew. You guys don't have to turn here because we're not going to stay here for a super long time, because I want to actually go to the one in Luke. But just a real quick account in Matthew. And this is when Jesus is calling his first disciples. It says, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus was, he saw two brothers, Simon, parentheses, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Immediately, they left their nets and followed him.
And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. And I was referring to when I was a kid sitting in the pews hearing messages on something like this. The reality is, as Matthew is writing to a Jewish audience who kind of already has faith, the rationale behind why they would follow him isn't necessarily what he's trying to communicate. But Luke actually communicates a lot more information. If you just look at this passage by itself without the context of the rest of the word, there's something missing. And for me, as I was approaching, you know, should I follow God? Should I give up everything for God? This seems a little bit irresponsible. Like, hey, Dad, good luck with the family business. Tell Mom we're going. Like, we're following this guy. He just showed up. You know, we're going. Like, we're leaving. Let's. It just seems a little like off, right? It's cool. It's cool. I mean, the huge step of faith, the huge leap of faith, taking a leap of faith, you believe God can do amazing things. That's really cool. But for a lot of us, I think, maybe Luke is a little bit of a better source for us just to analyze the story. So what we're going to do is we're going to turn to Luke 5. So you've got a Bible out there. We're going to tune to Luke 5, and we're going to read the first 11 verses kind of one at a time here. Because there's sort of you know, Luke started his gospel out. He said, hey, I'm writing to a Gentile audience. You don't necessarily believe in God. There's not necessarily a lot of information for you. And so I've thoroughly researched this so you have all the information. So I think kind of like some of us maybe. And so there's a little bit of background here, actually. In the previous chapter, Jesus steps into this guy Simon's house and heals his mother-in-law from having a fever. And then in the next section here in chapter 5, he meets a guy named Simon. And so there's a little bit of a context there where Jesus actually seems to have had a little bit of contact, just a little bit of contact with this guy named Simon. You read in the book of John, actually. You can go into John 1, and you can see where there's an account where Andrew, who is the brother of Simon, as we just read about in Matthew, Andrew actually gets convinced by John, their business partner, as they fishermen. Right? John finds Jesus. John comes back. He's like, hey, Andrew, I think we found this guy. So Andrew's like, hey, Peter, my brother, Peter, we found the Messiah. You should come meet him. And Jesus meets Peter, or meets Simon. He says, from now on, you're going to be called Peter. And that's kind of all we see there. And then he starts following him. So there's these different accounts, right? And so I think some of those things have already happened at this point. Simon, Peter, has got a little bit of a sense of, there's this guy, he's wandering around the geographical area, and people are following him, and he's kind of a big deal, and some people are throwing out these labels, like he's the Messiah, he's the Son of God, I'm not really sure what I think. And that's kind of what the scene is here. So verse 1, chapter 5, on one occasion. And this is history, this is a narrative of history. On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him, that's pressing in on Jesus, there's this crowd following him around. To hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. And this is how Luke describes this lake. The other gospels in here describe this lake as the Sea of Galilee. There's multiple names for this sea. And so this place actually exists. So here's the geography. This is just straight out of Google Maps. If you look up the Sea of Galilee, it's a thing. So it's this little dot right here in Israel. You know, so you've got Israel, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq is somewhere over here. Egypt's down here, modern day. So Jesus is right here, and where he's actually at is probably kind of the northwest. So if we zoom in just a little bit, he's somewhere in here-ish. This is kind of where people have accepted that he is. And he's just hanging out. And he's hanging out on the beach. He's standing by the lake. And in verse 2, and he saw two boats by the lake. But the fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. And then the next verse, it says, getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's. He asked him to put out a little bit from the land. And he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. So Simon and his brother Andrew and their business partners, James and John, they're fishermen. And what fishermen did back then is they had these nets. And so, first of all, this is the lake. It's a pretty big lake. It's actually the lowest freshwater lake in the world. There's one lake lower than this, and it's the Dead Sea. It's a salt lake, which actually the Jordan River comes out of this one and eventually empties into the Dead Sea. That's where that is. Okay, so Jesus, just imagine he's looking out at this water.
So they've actually done some digs and done some finds and stuff like that. They've actually found boats. Is this an actual boat from this time period? So this is the type of boat that Peter and his business partners would have had in their fishing business. And you can just kind of see the basic hull there. It's supported because it's really, really rotten. But that's about the size. I found an image that had people next to it, so we kind of get a sense of how big this boat would be. So they pull these boats in and out every day as they're doing fishing. You know, they don't have refrigeration, so the neighboring communities are kind of dependent on them to fish every single day. And then they come back and they sell their fish, right? And then they feed the neighboring villages, and that's their business. And fishermen were actually pretty, you know, decently well off back then. These guys are really, like, well-to-do businessmen. And what they would do is they'd actually fish at night. They would fish at night. And the reason for that is just kind of lake temperature and things like that. You know, they wouldn't be out there. One of the things they needed to get done kind of early so that they could get up to the markets and sell fish for the day so people could eat for the day. But the fish were more apt to be caught at night because especially when you're out kind of in deep water, the fish would be more near the surface at night. And in the daytime, that surface kind of heats up and the fish go down a little bit deeper into the cold. And then there's the moonlight and just various things, and they're just more apt to catch fish at night. And so that's what they had done. They had gone out at night, and this is kind of morning, maybe midday, and Jesus shows up with this crowd, and he's teaching on the shore. And it just so happens that Jesus, I think, strategically, is standing here by these guys that he's going to call to follow him. And so they're just there. And they're working on their nets. So they've come in, they've pulled their boats up on the shore, and they pulled all their nets in. Here's an example of kind of what net they would have had. These are casting nets, and what they would do is you kind of grab on. I've actually tried one of these nets. It's kind of fun. Throwing the net out and catching fish, you pull it in. You just hope there's fish near the surface, and the net swings out. So it has kind of a circular motion. It swings out, and there's weights all around the edges, and it kind of sinks down and then captures whatever fish happened to be sitting there, and then they pull it back in. So it would have been kind of similar to what they did back then. That's what they're doing. They're standing up in their boat and they're throwing nets. When they cast a net, they cast it out and it sinks down around the fish and wraps up the fish and they pull it in. Okay? So that's what they're doing. Now this is an actual fisher boat, and this actually a photograph. It's been colorized more recently, but this is a photograph from the 1800s, the Sea of Galilee. So we'll just imagine this is kind of like their boat. And they're kind of on this rocky seashore, and they're just hanging out. And what they're doing is they've actually pulled in all their nets, because if they didn't wash and kind of dry their nets every night, like this, remember, this is their livelihood. This is like their thing, right? So if you're if you got horses, and you go ride your horses and stuff like that, like you bring your horses back in, you clean them up, you wipe them down, you clean up all the stuff. You know, you've got to deal with your business. And so it's very, very important for them that they stretch their nets out, and they get all the debris out of it, you know, all the sunglasses and the beer bottles and the boots and everything else that they've caught overnight. You got to get all that stuff off of there, the seaweed. Because the next night, if it's not off of there, you're not going to catch any fish. So that's the first thing they do when they pull their boats up is they clean the nets off. And then they hang up to dry because you don't want, I mean, this is their livelihood. These are their tools. They don't want them to rot. And so that's what they're doing. And Jesus strategically picks that spot to teach this crowd. And I imagine what's going on in the back of Peter's mind is like, good grief, I'm just here trying to work. And you got a crowd. And suddenly Jesus is right up on the shore, right up against his boat, and the people are pressing in on him. And Jesus asks Peter, can I borrow your boat? Just think of how inconvenient that was. Can I borrow your boat? I don't know, Peter's probably sort of like he's familiar with this guy, and there's a whole crowd looking at him, and he's kind of, maybe he's done cleaning his net, and he's like, all right, fine, I'll let him stand in my boat. Everybody here loves this guy, so I guess I'll be cool by proxy. I'll be the guy who, like, gets him in my boat, right? Like, he's got a good reputation, it's going to rub off on me a little bit, like, that's cool. So he takes a little step, and he's a little bit inconvenienced. Make sure I'm not leaving anything out here. All right. So I just want to point out two things. One, first of all, there was a step that was taken right at the beginning where Peter's faith is bolstered just a little bit because he's hearing Jesus teach. He's seeing that Jesus' words are having an effect on a crowd. And it reminds me a little bit of Romans 10:17, where the Apostle Paul writes, and he says, you know, faith comes by hearing. And Peter, in proximity to Jesus, is hearing Jesus teach. And I don't know how much that influenced him taking his next step. So his first step was he's there hearing. And then he takes another step by allowing Jesus to get into his boat. It's like, this is a little bit of an inconvenience. Like the first one, that wasn't really that big of a deal. You know, he's just there. It's a little irritating maybe, but he's hearing these words. And then Jesus says, can I borrow your boat? And he's like, because I took that first step and actually actively listened to you, and I think I believe something to be true about you, at least you're this rabbi guy, you're this guy, I'm going to allow you to do this. So he takes another step. All right, so verse 3 here, getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's, he asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. So now Peter's a captive audience, sitting with Jesus. This is a little different than the story in Matthew where he just walks up and says, follow me, right? This is like, he's getting more and more data. Right? He's hearing just a little bit more to bolster his faith. And he's also, you know, in proximity to Jesus, he's aware that he's being seen by all these people. And, you know, he kind of supplies their meals and stuff like that. So I wonder, he's probably got all kinds of mixed things going on in his head. And this is interesting for us because as we think about following Jesus, there's all kinds of mixed stuff going on in us. And if you just go, I've got to leave everything and be done with this and have absolutely pure motives and I've got to get my act together and then I'm going to follow him, you're going to start missing stuff. Jesus is like, no, there's incremental steps here. You're going to listen a little bit. Your intellect is going to be stirred a little bit. You're going to see maybe this is more logical than I actually thought. And then I'm going to be a little bit inconvenienced. But I want to take that step of faith. And just try. And acknowledge, as Peter probably is doing here, you know, he's got some maybe fame by proximity. It might actually help his business a little bit. People see his is the fishing boat that the rabbi was in. I'm going to buy fish from that guy. You know, he's got all this stuff probably going on in the back of his mind. He's so, sure, yeah, it's not a huge step. It's mildly, you know, irritating maybe, I don't know. So then verse 4, and when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And so this is something that's really funny. I wonder if Peter's like, what's this carpenter rabbi guy know about fishing? Obviously not much because it's the middle of the day. We just got done, and we just got done like cleaning up all our stuff. Like we got done finishing, and now he's asking me to get my nets dirty again and go out again, and I'm tired, and we didn't actually catch anything overnight. It's kind of weird, and it's interesting because Jesus asks him in this step. We're going to just talk about these four steps that are being taken here. This is step 3. And Jesus is asking him, you know, not just to inconvenience himself, but to do something he's already done. Like, he's already familiar with these things. Jesus is entering into his world a little bit. He's entering into his business a little bit. The place where he's actually an expert. Peter's an expert. He's been doing this his whole life. This is his whole profession. He's got business partners. Jesus probably doesn't know anything about fishing, you know, in comparison to Peter. And yet Jesus says, hey, let's go fishing. Let's just do the thing that you are used to doing, except we're going to do it in just a little bit of a different way. Are you willing to trust me? And I think in Peter's mind, he's going, all right, well, you know, the people are still looking, so there's that. Maybe I can go out with Jesus, and it's going to look good. I did hear his teaching, and, you know, he had some good words to say, and I think, you know, maybe this would be good. I already went this one step. I'm already out in the boat with him. So we might as well. Let's go for it. It's a bit of an inconvenience. And so look what he says in verse 5. And Simon answered, Master, we toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word I will let down the nets. That word master there, if you go into the Greek, is very interesting because he's not calling Jesus God. He's not calling him Messiah, the Christ. He's basically calling him, hey, guy that I respect that has some good things to say. Because you have some good things to say, I'll take you at your word, and we'll go let down those nets. You know, we've been fishing all night. We haven't caught anything. Jesus says, hey, let's go fishing when you're not supposed to go fishing.
do something that you think is absurd. You actually know better than me, but I'm going to ask you to go do something and do it in a different way than you think you know best of. And Peter's like, all right, we can do that. And what's interesting is what's at stake here. If Peter had not taken this step, which is step three, first one is hearing the word, second one being mildly inconvenienced, the third one is he's going to take Jesus fishing. If he had not taken this step, we wouldn't know his name today. Think about that. The book of Mark wouldn't have been written. If Jesus could have pulled back the curtain just a little bit on what hung in the balance of this one decision Peter had to take Jesus fishing. And if Jesus could have pulled back the curtain just a little bit, like what if he did this? Hey, look at this thing, Peter. Peter's like, what's that? That's the Statue of Liberty. Do you know how tall that is? That's over 300 feet tall. Peter's like, I've never seen anything that tall. Are those people? Those are people right there. Those are people. That's huge. Could blow his mind. And then if Jesus would have gone, do you know what this is, Peter? This is a building that statue will fit inside of. That's how big this building is. Peter went, oh man, that's cool. Peter, that's your tomb. And this is St. Peter's Basilica. And guess what? You're St. Peter. If you're Catholic, that's a big deal. It's kind of amazing. I mean, tradition has it that Peter was actually martyred in Rome. And, you know, we know a lot about where Paul was held in prison and where Peter was held in prison. And, we don't really know for sure, but this is the site where people think St. Peter was buried, that his remains are underneath this building. Jesus could pull back the curtain just a little bit. Like, the whole world, Peter, is going to know your story, know your name. You're going to do incredible things. You're going to actually, by my power, heal people. You're going to raise people from the dead. Like, if he could pull back that curtain, all of this hangs in the balance of your one step of taking me fishing. Want to go fishing? Peter would be like, sure. You want my boat too? Like, you want all my business, everything? Like, take it all. I see it clearly, right? So they go fishing. So verse 6. And when they had done this, they went out and he put the net down in deep water. Like, we're way out. They're way out in the sea. It took them a while to get out there. I wonder what they talked about on the way out there. Peter's like, do you know anything about fishing? Like, seriously, fish in the middle of the day? Out in deep water? You know, the fish go down. And they go down in the middle of the day. Like, this is absurd, Jesus. But he's still doing it. All right, so when they had done this, they enclosed in the net, as the net went down, a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. They signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. They came and filled both the boats so that the boats began to sink. Incredible. Peter takes this tiny little step of faith, and Jesus' power meets that little tiny step of faith and just does an amazing thing. It's incredible. But suddenly, it's no longer about the fish. It's amazing that they got so many fish, right? I mean, Peter could have been pulling in his boats. Hey, John, James, Andrew, like, we don't have to work for a month. Like, you know, except they didn't have refrigeration, so they would have had a problem there. I don't know what they did with their fish. What did they do with their fish? I don't know. But it says they filled both boats. And so when Simon Peter, this is verse 8, when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees. And here's a departure from him calling Jesus master. Watch this. Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. After taking step three, Peter suddenly realizes in full who this man actually is. He's not just a good teacher. He's not just a well-respected rabbi. He calls him Lord. He recognizes this is no ordinary man. And suddenly the other thing that he recognizes is he is a sinner. And what's his response immediately? Get away from me. I can't be in your presence. It's interesting when you go through the whole Bible and you see when people come in contact with God, it's a horrific experience. You know, Isaiah has a vision. He sees God, and the first thing he says is, I am ruined. I'm falling into pieces.
You know, when people come in contact with the supernatural, it is, you can't handle it. Moses, in way back in the beginning, Moses caught a glimpse of a reflection in a rock of the backside of God as God passed by. And Moses was glowing so much when he came off that mountain that the Israelites couldn't even look at him. They couldn't bear to look at him. And it was a reflection in a rock of the backside of the glory of God. And so you come in contact with the supernatural, you come in contact with God, and Peter's response is exactly what we'd all have. Get away from me. You're going to destroy me. I can't be here. And I wonder if he wasn't out in deep water, if he would have just run away. But he's stuck with Jesus in the boat. And so Jesus, he says, okay, so for he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. So also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. And they're like, what did he say, catching men? I'm not really sure what that means, but okay. And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything. And they followed him. So Peter has seen who Jesus is, and he suddenly realizes he's not in the presence of an ordinary man. This is the supernatural. This is God himself. And he recognizes, just like Matthew, I'm sick. I'm not worthy. I'm a wicked man. Get away from me. I'm sinful. I can't bear to be in your presence. Do you ever feel like that? Like, the preacher stands up and exhorts you to follow Jesus, and you're like, the closer I get to Jesus, the worse I feel. You ever thought about that? The more condemnation I feel inside myself. Peter definitely was feeling that. So here's our steps. Remember, I think the first step, just as a way of reminder, and get them up on the screen so we can, you know, kind of get that linear, objective view of what we've been talking about. That first step where Peter's on the edge of the shore, and he's just working and he's listening. That first step is to sit and listen. And so every single one of us in this room, you might be what is called a non-believer. You might not believe in any of this supernatural stuff. You might not believe, you might just believe Jesus. Maybe he's just a historical figure. But, you know, there's a lot of kooky stuff around thinking that there's this supernatural existence. The fact that you're here in this room, you've already taken step one. You sit and listen. Step one in following Jesus is to sit and listen. Remember Romans 10, faith comes by hearing. Anyone who tells you, like, faith should be blind, don't ask questions. If you jump into a church group or something like that where they say don't ask questions, run away. That's a bad deal. God actually wants you to be intellectually satisfied. In fact, I think your faith kind of depends on that. You need to know the information. God has given us a whole bunch of information right here in this book. Sit and listen. And so step one for you might just be simply open this book up and maybe get a few questions answered. Step two, loan Jesus your boat. Now, most of us don't own a boat. I know Chuck Henry owns a boat. Jesus asks you for your boat, Chuck, are you going to take him fishing? Maybe just take him out in the boat. I've been out in Chuck's boat. It's really fun. Anyway, boats are fun. But, you know, most of us don't have a boat, but remember I was talking about at the beginning, well, I actually prayed it, that God would nudge us just a little bit in some of our things. And, you know, I think for each one of us, we've got kind of a similar situation to Peter. Like, God's going, you know what, you need to take a step towards me, and it's going to be inconvenient just a little bit. It's going to be something. I'm not sure what it is for each one of us. But if you're on this place in your journey of faith, God's maybe nudging you right now, saying, hey, you know, the way you're conducting your business, that one piece of it that's just a little bit unethical, why don't you let me in there? That person you're dating, you know it's been a bad bum deal. You know it's dragging you down. You need to stop that. You know that thing you do on the weekends? Maybe it's something in there. I don't know. God's nudging at you. He's going, and you know, you probably know what it is. Allow yourself just a little bit of inconvenience and trust me. And then there's this one. Take Jesus fishing. You know, that thing he's talking about. Like, let's go all in with it. You know, maybe it's your time. I think for some of us it's time. Time's a huge one now. All of us, everybody I talk to is busy, 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 busy. Huge inconvenience to take Jesus fishing. But maybe Jesus is going, hey, you know what? That church thing you guys are all doing, you need to jump into a small group. You can sit down with people and ask those questions, get those questions answered. Start thinking a little bit more spiritually. Do something maybe that you've done a million times, but do it my way. I don't know. It could be something. It could be in the realm of finances. It could be in the realm of relationships. It could be in the realm of your business. I don't know. Your time management, whatever it is. Jesus is asking you to take a step, and it's going to inconvenience you. But remember what happened with that little step that Peter took. He took a little step of faith, and Jesus' power and Jesus' faithfulness intersected that little step of faith, and suddenly there's all these fish. And then the last one, maybe you've done that a lot. Maybe you've done that a lot. But, you know, you're still sort of debating, like, am I all in? Maybe I see who Jesus is, but am I all in? And maybe you're at that step where you're like, I'm going to leave my net. I'm going to jump fully into this. And I'm not looking back. I'm going to follow Jesus. So it's not like the first one is like you got your little baby faith, and then your second one is like, okay, you're slightly grown up. It's like we're all on a journey. And every single one of us is going to be somewhere in here. But I just wanted to close us with this. So I mentioned that Peter ran into Jesus, and he recognized who Jesus was. And suddenly, when he encountered the supernatural, he really wanted to get away because he recognized his sin. And I think the thing that's holding us back from following often is that. And that's how I want to end tonight. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about our sin. Talk about how when you think about that guy asked you to lead a small group at Summit View, and you went, eh, but I feel guilty about this. And every time I get into a place like that, I just feel worse. I feel this condemnation. I'm not getting it right. I can't get it together. You know, somebody asked me to jump into this Bible study thing. Well, you know what? I can't get it right. I can't open the Bible every day, and I fall asleep in the middle of it, and, you know, or I just don't have time for that, or I don't know. There's something eating at you inside whenever you get closer. And it's keeping you from taking that all-in step of faith. And like Peter, you're like, I just need some distance from church, from God, from people. I don't like feeling that way. I don't like being reminded of my inconsistencies. I don't want to look in that mirror because it doesn't feel good. So I'm going to turn to John 21. You can go there if you want and follow along with me. But Jesus did this miracle twice. And it's about 3 years apart. And he just so happened to do it with Peter. And so what's happened in the meantime, Peter left everything. And he's followed Jesus. And he's seen a lot and he's heard a lot. And Jesus gets arrested, and Jesus goes to the cross, and Jesus dies, and Peter sees the whole thing, and he sees there's a resurrection, and Jesus comes back to life, and that's happened. And the disciples are still in this place where they haven't quite figured out, like, what is going on. And so Peter and John and some of the guys, they're like, man, let's just go fishing. This is what we know. Let's go fishing. And so, go back. So they're fishing, and they're about 100 yards off the shore, and suddenly Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, shows up on the shore.
So just as day was breaking, verse 4, John 21, verse 4, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, do you have any fish?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." And so they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of the fish. And up to this point, they hadn't really recognized him, but I think they're catching glimpses and remembering back to what happened before, and suddenly they have so many fish they can't pull in the net. And so the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John, because we're writing, this is the book of John, and John refers to himself that way all the way through the book. He's the one Jesus loved. It's like Jesus' best buddy is John, right? The disciple whom Jesus loved, John, therefore said to Peter, "It is the Lord." Now look at the difference in Peter's response. Okay? When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. So they're 100 yards off the shore. He threw himself into the sea. He's so excited to get to Jesus. Now, if you know the story, remember this. Peter had denied that he even knew Jesus. Peter had failed. Peter had turned traitor on Jesus. And he did it not once, not twice, but three times. And so Peter hasn't been restored yet. There's no restoration that's happened. He hasn't connected back with Jesus at this point. So he's sitting there in the boat under the guilt of having turned against Jesus, of having denied he even knew Jesus, of having lied, of having turned traitor. He's sitting under that guilt. He's feeling the condemnation. He is more acutely aware of his sin than he was back in Luke 5. But his response is not, "Get away from me, for I am a sinful man." His response is, "I got to get to Jesus as fast as I possibly can. I'm not going to wait for these guys to row the boat in. I'm going in the water." The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. So Peter makes the 100-yard swim. They got on land. They saw a fire there. Jesus brought some fish. So Peter went on board. He hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And there were so many, the net was not torn. 153 fish. It's an interesting tidbit. You throw tidbits like that in when you're writing historical fact. It's just a piece of evidence that this is historical. You would have said a lot of fish or whatever. This is 153 fish. Somebody counted. I bet it was Peter. "Look, we got 153 fish. He gave 150, this is a miracle, like 153, it's not 150 or whatever. Anyway, Jesus said, "Come have breakfast," and they knew it was the Lord, and then Jesus reinstates Peter. What was the difference? Peter understands the gospel. Peter understands grace. Peter understands that when Jesus went to the cross, he took the sin, the weight of the world, all of that wrongdoing, all of that guilt, all of that condemnation, he took it on himself there on the cross, and he defeated it there. And when he raised from the dead, he defeated death, he defeated sin. So there's no more penalty for it. And so the gospel changes everything about how we approach following Jesus. The gospel basically just means the good news of what Jesus did for us. Because without it, we approach God and we freak out. We can't be near him. We feel condemned. I can't do that church thing. With the gospel, in the middle of our guilt and sin, we run straight into Jesus because he paid for our sins on the cross. That's the difference. And so my question for us is, am I willing to take a step in light of the gospel, in light of what that has done for me, in light of the fact that I want to be John 21 Peter and not Luke 5 Peter necessarily. And I, because of what Jesus has done for me, I can run straight into him in the middle of my guilt. Am I going to do it? Am I willing to do it? So my question is, does your sin, is it driving you to him or is it driving you away from him? If it's driving you away from him, you don't understand the gospel. If it's driving you to him, maybe you do. You get it. The good news. Jesus has dealt with your sin.
The answer to healing is getting into his heart, getting into him, having breakfast with him, being with him. The vine and the branch, he's going to change you, right? If you're always sort of irritable and grouchy and away from it and you're just, you know, comparing yourself to others and sticking people in the bad category, it's like you don't understand the gospel. You don't understand it. So we have our four different steps. Maybe your step is, I'm going to sit and listen for a while. I'm just going to open up the Bible. Maybe the second step is, I'm going to allow myself to be a little bit inconvenienced. He's got to get in my boat. All right, fine. I'll give up that Wednesday night and I'll go to that small group meeting. Maybe I'll get more of my questions answered. Am I going to take Jesus fishing? Maybe I need to conduct my business a little bit of a different way. Maybe I need to allow God into that relationship that I'm just selfish in. Maybe whatever it is. Or maybe it's that step four. I see the gospel. I see how God has changed me. I see that my future, maybe it's not going to be St. Peter's Basilica, but my future is an eternal glory that's unbelievable. Why would I trade anything on this side of life for that? I'm going to go all in and leave my nets behind. Maybe it's that one. So my first question is, what is the next step for you? I'd like us to ask that this week. What's my next step? And then here's two. Am I willing to take it? Let's pray. Jesus, I just pray that you would help us to see the truth. That because of what you did on the cross, there's good news for us, that we can access you and we can be in relationship with you. Help us in our faith, even if it's a little tiny faith, to take whatever the next step is for us towards you. I want to be like Peter. I want to just dive into the water and get to you as fast as I possibly can. But help me to see where I'm not doing that. And help me to be willing to take that step. I pray that for all of us. In Jesus' name, amen. So we're going to continue with another story next week. I just invite all you guys to come back. Bring your friends. We'll have another meal next week. I heard we may have Chinese food next week, which would be awesome. So thanks for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys next week.